memory surfaced. Janie tried to stomp on it. Her feet actually moved, kicking away the memory. The memory came anyhow. Not a daymare. More like a soundtrack. She, who lived in a household without religion, knew a prayer. Bless this food, bless this house, may all my brood be quiet as a mouse. We recited that at dinner. There were so many of us, and we made such a racket. He wanted us to be quiet for just a little while. He, my real father. No, 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 no. I want to be Janie Johnson, not Jenny Spring. Go away. Drop dead. Leave me alone. Janie, what are you thinking about? Said her mother. She surfaced from New Jersey. It was like swimming underwater, having to shake your head before you could see again. Oh, nothing, she said. The brightness in her voice was so false, even the waitress paused and took notice. Janie tried to do homework. It was impossible. She walked around her room, touching, wishing. On top of a stack of papers lay a small, square, spiral notebook with a silver glitter cover and silver-rimmed pages. Every September, Janie started the new school year by buying an assortment of pretty notebooks from various gift shops. She always intended to write assignments in one, keep a diary in another, copy interesting poems or phrases in a third, and so forth. She rarely made more than a page of entries before the assignment notebook was misplaced, or the diary became dull. She opened the silver notebook. Only two pages had been touched. Janie ripped them out and flipped to the middle, where it looked safe. She began to draft a letter, to help herself think about the unthinkable. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Spring, in the school cafeteria, I took my friend's milk carton, and on it was a photograph of your little girl who was stolen from a shopping center in New Jersey all those years ago. It was me. I recognized myself. But I knew it couldn't be true, because I have a wonderful mother and father already, and a wonderful life, and I have always been very happy. So I couldn't have been kidnapped. It really wasn't me. She was too tired to write. Her hand shook and the six sides of the pencil hurt her fingers. That's when you know you're weak, she thought, when pencil surfaces wound you. She closed the notebook and put it under the clip in her three-ring notebook along with the milk carton. In the morning, she fell asleep during math. During English, when Mr. Brilow was discussing modern European literature, she opened her silver glitter notebook and wrote again. Every time I look at that carton, I have another memory. Of a kitchen and spilled milk, high chairs and a dog named Honey. A table blessing about mice. And there's the dress. It's in the attic. Tomorrow, when my mother is out of the house, I'm going to get it out and iron it. I'll hang it in the back of my own closet, where I can see it. Mr. Brilow said, Janie? She looked up, startled and unfocused. Everybody else has left for lunch, Janie. The room was entirely empty. Mr. Brilow said, Janie, is there anything you would like to talk about? Anything you'd like to share with me? She shook her head. The classroom door seemed terribly far away, hard to find. And lunch, even though Reeve would be there, hardly seemed worth the effort it would take to reach the cafeteria. She got halfway there and had to finish her thoughts. Had to write. It was like a druggie stabbing his vein. She stopped right in the hall, holding the silver notebook against the wall for a desk, and writing vertically. You must promise not to go to the police or even to get mad at my parents, because they are my parents. They are my mother and father. I love them. The most terrible thing about this is that I forgot you. I am very sorry. I don't know how or why I could have. But until I saw that photograph of me on the milk carton, I never thought of you. You can stop worrying. I'm all right. I have always been all right. But the thing is, I haven't told my parents. I don't know how to tell them that they were part of kidnapping me. I haven't decided yet whether I want to meet you. I know that sounds awful, but I have a family and I love them, and I don't know you. Three times a week after history, she had typing. They were learning to do envelopes. Since they had to use up envelopes anyhow, the class was doing a mailing for students against drunk driving. Janie had 25 to address. The class was filled with the clicking of keyboards, the moans of students making errors, and the continuous demand for replacement envelopes when somebody goofed up too much to use the old one. Everybody wanted to be using the computers instead of the typewriters, because you could correct your errors so much more easily. The afternoon sun came strong and golden through the windows. Both students and teacher were half asleep. Janie's own mistakes had nothing to do with the heat of the sun. She kept putting her own return address on the envelope, instead of SADD's. But the envelopes were still perfectly useful, so she stuck them under the clipboard in her blue cloth notebook. For the 100th time, she checked both sides of her milk carton. It was still her. "I'm like a toddler with my blanket," thought Janie. "I can't get very far from my carton. Pretty soon I'll be sucking my thumb again." After school, Reeve caught her so she couldn't take off for the library. "Or points unknown," he said. "Or Sarah Charlotte's." In his jeep, they went to the scenic overlook and watched the couples for whom it was a sexual overlook. "I can't," said Janie miserably. "No matter what is happening, my mind slides around to New Jersey."
"I wish I could say the same," Reeve said. "No matter what is happening, my mind slides around to you. It's consuming my whole life. I don't even have a life except thinking about you."
She wasn't sure if he meant thinking about Janie or thinking about sex with Janie. They kissed each other. But Janie turned away almost before it began, and his lips brushed her disappearing cheek instead. He said,
"You're losing weight, aren't you?"
"I'm too nervous to eat."
"Tell me."
"Reeve, I want them not to exist. New Jersey, I mean. I don't want them to be down there, waiting. I feel as if they're going to pop up somehow and leap into my life, and I won't have any choice. I want my parents. Not them." He nodded. His cheek brushed against hers, and it was a sensation she had never had before. An unshaven cheek. "Besides," she whispered, "it makes me realize what a horrible little girl I was. Reeve, I'm so afraid to find out what happened. What if I gave up those brothers and sisters and the father who shouted blessings just for an ice cream sundae?"
He said, "I suppose you did, Janie. Maybe it was pretty neat to be the center of all that attention, driving fast and laughing and singing and having ice cream, and new parents and new clothes and a new bedroom."
"I would have been 3 and a half, cried Janie. "Kids that old know how to use the telephone. They have their phone numbers memorized."
"But would it have occurred to you to call up New Jersey? You wouldn't have felt kidnapped. You were having lots of fun. When they said, 'Pretend you're our little girl,' gosh, Janie, you'd be great at that. You always have some fantasy running in your head, like that whole denim and lace thing."
"I never told you about denim and lace," said Janie, embarrassed.
"No, but Sarah Charlotte did."
"You talked about me last year to Sarah Charlotte?"
"Yeah." Now do you feel like kissing me?
She did. They did. And it was good. I love you, Reeve, she said. How easily it came out. How true it was.
Maybe they were mean to you in New Jersey, suggested Reeve.
No, said Janie. I can remember that much. Nobody was ever mean. You know, in a way I'd like to go to that adolescent trauma thing and ask a doctor about memory loss. How come I didn't remember?
Reeve said, I don't suppose you needed to remember before. Everything was fine. If you hadn't seen the milk carton, it would still be fine.
I hate that dairy. I'm never drinking flour dairy milk again.
Good, because you have a milk allergy.
They leaned on each other, snuggling for the best fit. Janie thought that nothing could be nicer than getting comfortable on Reeve's chest. She was aware of his scents. Reeve himself. The faint soapiness of his shirt. A slight perfume from his shampoo. If it hadn't happened, she thought, I wouldn't be me. I would be somebody else entirely. It horrified her that she had once daydreamed of being somebody other than Janie Johnson. Jane Johnstone, indeed. How precious her own name and address seemed now. Reeve had supper with the Johnsons. Nobody discussed Hannah or grandparents or the skipped day of school. After dessert, Reeve had Janie's as well as his own. Janie's mother didn't seem to see how little Janie ate. They studied together. Reeve was done in 3 minutes and wanted to know what he was supposed to do for the next 2 hours. That night, along with checking her milk carton, Janie checked her SADD envelope, where her real address was so professionally typed. It seemed to her that they might offset each other, the carton and the envelope. Chapter 15. Soccer season was nearly over. Cake decorating was drawing to a close, and her mother wanted to take pottery next. Janie had taken the polka dot dress out of the trunk, washed and ironed it, and hung it in the back of her closet. Every morning and every night she touched it, as routinely as she brushed her teeth. She had made dozens of entries in the silver notebook. Writing cleansed. It removed the badness from her mind and kept it safely on the paper. Autumn had all but vanished. One maple hung on to a few yellow leaves, and a hedgerow was wine red behind the house. On Saturday the sky was indigo blue, like new jeans. The wind was soft and warm, as if it had news to spread.
"Let's go for a drive," said Reeve, who was having breakfast with the Johnsons. He liked breakfast there on weekends, because Mrs. Johnson, who ignored weekday breakfast, got excited on Saturdays and produced waffles, bacon, and melon slices. Reeve's mother just said she had been making breakfast for 27 years, and anybody who wanted breakfast again this year knew where the cereal was.
"It's perfect weather to head into the horizon," said Janie's mother, looking out the window.
"It's funny how you feel that tug only in the fall," said her father.
"No other season. In the autumn, you want to go, drive, have a journey." When had Hannah decided to leave? Janie wondered. Out loud, she said, "Where should we go, Reeve?"
"Anywhere. I have a full tank of gas, and I earned money last week cleaning out the McKay's garage and cellar. I'm rich. We can eat lunch anywhere."
He grinned at her. Friday, when she got home, Janie had dumped her book bag on the kitchen floor. Now, getting up for more orange juice, she shoved it out of the way and the books fell out, spreading across the linoleum.
"Janie," said her mother crossly, "how many times do I have to tell you to carry your book bag directly up to your bedroom?"
6 million, said Janie. With his shoes,
Reeve pushed the books into a pile to pick up.
"Reeve," said Janey, "how many times do I have to tell you to handle school property carefully?"
6 million, he said. "Thanks for the waffles, Mrs. Johnson. Maybe Janey and I will drive to Vermont and get you more maple syrup."
Together, he and Mrs. Johnson began picking up the books.
"Vermont," said Janey's father. "That's 4 hours away."
"We'd still get back before dark," said Reeve.
Janey's mother scooped up the books nearest her chair. The load was too heavy for her hand and dropped back on the floor. The blue cloth English notebook fell open. The milk carton lay exposed. Janey lunged forward, slamming the cover shut, grabbing her books. Her parents stared at her.
"Sorry,"
said Janey with a bright, crazy smile on her face. Her heart was throbbing. Her horrible headache had begun again. She already knew tonight's nightmare. The carton falling out, her parents seeing it, New Jersey exposed and waiting. She put the books back in the book bag, zipped it shut, and ran upstairs with it. Clattering back down, she grabbed the jacket Reeve tossed and slipped her arms into the heavy sleeves.
"Let's go, Reeve."
"Telephone if you're going to be out after dark," said her father.
Reeve promised. He took Janey's hand and swung her around like a dance partner. They ran out of the house. He was in a great mood. He talked steadily. Janey loved to listen to him. In Reeve's childhood, Megan, Lizzie, and Todd had done all the talking. Reeve's delight, when at last both sisters and his brother were away, came through in his speech. For a change, Reeve could have the audience.
"I must have wanted an audience, too," thought Janey. "I was only 3 and a half, and I wanted a bigger audience."
Reeve did all the driving. She hadn't had another driving lesson with either parent. They would have to talk about licenses if they did, and the birth certificate problem. And she was afraid of screaming, "But I know my real birthday. I can make one phone call and they'll send me my real birth certificate." She was trying to fence off all the dangerous places, where things might cave in, where they would know that she knew. She kept having the sense that if she could steer her life right, the way Reeve was steering the Jeep right, they would avoid ever hitting the kidnapping.
"I looked up the kidnapping in the New York Times," said Janey.
She had interrupted him. Reeve stopped his story and drove on, looking straight ahead, his body stiff. "He thought my mind was on him," Janey thought, "and now he knows it wasn't."
"I'm sorry. What were you saying?"
He shrugged.
"I thought you were going to stop worrying about New Jersey," he said.
"I was."
"So what happened?"
"I can't," he said, trying to be lighthearted.
"I'm not enough distraction for you, huh?"
"The only thing anybody wants is to be the center of a universe," she thought.
Reeve had to wait for Megan, Lizzie, and Todd to go away before he could be the center. "I wanted the center so much I traded my family for an ice cream sundae." She said,
"You're not a distraction. You're the light of my life."
She thought he would make a face at this Valentine's card sentiment, but he said,
"Really?"
His face relaxed somewhat.
"Really,"
said Janey. His face relaxed completely. Reeve stopped at a restaurant. It was too early to eat anything when they were still waffle stuffed. He ordered Cokes. Reeve chewed ice.
"Don't do that," she said. "You might crack your teeth."
"There are parts of me I wish you'd pay more attention to than my teeth," said Reeve.
They flirted. She loved the silly sentences, the innuendo. "Sarah Charlotte may look older and act older," thought Janey happily, "but I'm the one doing older things." When Reeve paid for the Cokes, she studied him. How he enjoyed looking in his wallet, seeing the thick wad of money, leaving a generous tip because he was glad to be driving away instead of waiting table.
He liked getting her jacket from the peg where he had hung it up, and he liked holding her hand as they left. "I love you," she thought. And she kissed him, just as they were going through the doors. So she got caught in the glass, bumping into a patron trying to enter. "If New Jersey hadn't happened," thought Janie, "I wouldn't have my own parents or my house or school or Sarah Charlotte or Reeve." They never reached Vermont. They saw a sign for a state park and drove in. A narrow road wound among thick, dark hemlocks and emerged at a cascading waterfall where boulders were surrounded by mountain laurel. The sun glittered on the leaping water, and when they parked, the sun's rays turned the interior of the car into a heated sunroom. "I love you, Reeve," she whispered, lying against him. "You know what?"
"What?"
"If I ever get in touch with New Jersey, I'll have to say, 'Luckily for me, I got kidnapped.' Of course, I'm not getting in touch. I never think about it anymore. I wrote it all down and spiraled it away." Reeve took a very deep breath. She giggled when his chest lifted her like an escalator, and then sank her back down.
"I called my sister," he said. "Lizzie."
Janie snuggled under Reeve's throat and felt it vibrate when he spoke.
"I told Lizzie everything," said Reeve.
"You what?" screamed Janie. She flung herself backward. She would have thrown things if there had been anything loose in the jeep.
"I had to, Janie. You need advice. And what do I know? She's a lawyer, or she's going to be."
"How dare you?" screamed Janie. "How dare you tell anybody without my permission? I haven't even told my own mother and father, and here you are telling Lizzie, who I can't even stand?" She was so frantic, the jeep was rocking.
Reeve put on the parking brake. "Listen, Janie, I told her everything you told me, and she said, 'Whatever Lizzie said, I don't want to hear it. I'm sorting this out in my own mind, and—'"
"You're losing your own mind, Janie." His voice was so soft, she could hardly hear it. Inside her head was a terrible racket, the crying and laughing of the voices of the past. She felt like a snow flurry. She was coming down fast in tiny wind-whipped particles. "No, I'm not losing my mind," she said desperately. "Am I?" He held her again. She didn't feel like a person in his arms, but like a small, scared animal. That word for Hannah's chosen husband. A mate. Like an animal. "Am I really Hannah's daughter? Could that be the truth? Will I turn out weird like Hannah? Am I already weird?" Lizzie looked up the kidnapping in the New York Times too, Janie. All the subsequent articles and all the follow-ups. "Janie, are you ready for this?"
"I'm not ready for anything."
"Lizzie thinks it's Hannah who kidnapped you. We all agree that Mr. and Mrs. Johnson just wouldn't do that, couldn't do that. Isn't it much more reasonable that Hannah really did run away from the cult, stopped at that shopping center in New Jersey? Maybe she had stolen a car or the cult guards had nearly caught up to her. She was afraid. She ran inside, and there was this sweet little girl who would hold her hand. Lizzie thinks maybe Hannah took you along for company. And Hannah was such a lost soul. Maybe she didn't even know she was kidnapping you. But if she did know, she sure wouldn't tell her mother and father when she got to their house." Peace settled on Janie. She felt heavier, as if her weight might press on Reeve till his ribs broke. She said, "Mother and Daddy aren't bad, then?"
"Well, we don't know anything for sure. But that way your parents' story is entirely true. Lizzie and I can't believe they would have been a part of anything criminal or evil."
Hannah was the evil criminal.
Janie was so lethargic she couldn't imagine moving again. How wonderful to place the crime on a woman who no longer counted in anybody's life. The son fondled her lovingly. Or was it Reeve? In an odd way, she felt even more like an animal, soaking up the sun. No worries, no cares, no concern for the future, just affection and warmth.
"I don't know," said Reeve. "I don't think Hannah sounds evil or criminal. I think she sounds like a scared, cult-blinded automaton. Even at 3, you are a hand to hold. Somebody to talk to in the car. Somebody to give Hannah courage until she reached her own mommy and daddy and was safe again."
Janie liked it. It meant that her parents had told no lies, were sane and good, really did consider themselves her grandparents, or parents. "There are too many parents in this," she said to Reeve.
"Tell me about it. And now I've thrown in Lizzie, who was tougher than any 4 parents anyhow."
"Lizzie sees kind of a problem, though, Janie. If we tell anybody about it, see, kidnapping is a federal offense no matter how many years have gone by. Like murder, you can still be tried. So if we say anything at all, the FBI would have to locate Hannah to prove or disprove our theory." It took too much effort even to lean on Reeve's chest. She managed to lie down, her head in his lap, her feet on the passenger seat, her back full of gear shifts.
"Isn't that uncomfortable?" said Reeve.
"Yes, but I'm too tired to sit up." Reeve reached awkwardly into the back seat and retrieved a stadium blanket.
"Let's sit out there by the waterfall."
He had to uncurl her from the gear sticks. They staggered into a spot of sunshine, and he spread the blanket on a rock, hot with sun. "Can you imagine the publicity?" said Janie. "All those horrible newspapers in grocery store racks, talk shows where everybody else on it has trans, bi, cross-sexual habits." She shuddered. "I can hardly wait to be among them."
Reeve said, "I'd settle for any sexual habit at all, Janie."
"I want to finish this topic first." Reeve sighed.
"Lizzie says if you're going to get in touch with New Jersey, you'll have to handle it privately."
"I suppose Lizzie thinks she's the best person in the world to handle it."
"Lizzie has always thought she's the best person in the world to handle anything," said Reeve.
"I've never liked that trait."
"It's even worse when you have to live with it, and when Megan and Todd are exactly the same."
"You know Megan and Lizzie and Todd," said Janie. "You grew up with them. I didn't grow up with my brothers and sisters. Do you think they ever talk about me at supper, or keep my picture on the wall, or say to each other, 'She'd be a sophomore in high school now?'"
"I'm sure they do," said Reeve.
He was kissing her everywhere. He had unbuttoned nothing, was feeling through the fabric. His mind was definitely not on New Jersey. "One bad thing is still true, though," said Janie, starting to cry.
"What?"
He kissed her tears, and she kissed his lips, tasting the salt of her own weeping. "I'm still a rotten little kid who wanted more attention and was willing to be kidnapped to get it."
Reeve laughed. "You can't have been too rotten if they're advertising on milk cartons to get you back."
"We're both frantic," she thought. "His heart is racing for me. My heart is racing for fear." She said, "There are only 2 choices."
"Right. Either we do it or we don't. I vote we do it."
"Wrong. Either I get in touch with New Jersey or I don't. I vote I don't."
"I vote that too. Who needs another family?"
Reeve shifted half on top of her. His weight was warm and convincing. Chapter 16. The following Saturday they rented movies.
Sarah Charlotte brought Jason and the potato chips.
"He's kind of a potato chip himself," she whispered to Janie.
"Hush,"
said Janie.
"I like Jason."
"I do too," said Sarah Charlotte.
"But he isn't romantic. He's just Jason."
Janie nodded.
"I got the romantic in the crowd," she said. "See my little pumpkin pin? Reeve gave it to me on Thanksgiving Day."
"That's so neat," cried Sarah Charlotte.
Mrs. Johnson brought in an immense bowl of popcorn. The four of them sat in a circle on the rug, arguing whether the popcorn or the Trivial Pursuit board deserved the middle. Jason said since he had rented the movies, he got to choose the first one. Reeve said somebody would have to sit with his back to the movie if they were playing Trivial Pursuit at the same time, and it wasn't going to be him.
"Bets on who will win Trivial Pursuit," said Sarah Charlotte, inelegantly stuffing a fistful of popcorn in her mouth.
"Not me," said Reeve. "I never know anything except sports."
"Not me," said Janie. "I never know anything."
"Oh, good," said Sarah Charlotte. "I love playing with dumbos. I always know everything. Your go, Janie."
Janie rolled the dice and chose geography. Sarah Charlotte took a card and read the question.
"Did Reeve give you the milk carton as well as the pumpkin pin? Does the carton have some sort of romantic significance?"
Janie choked on her popcorn. Reeve slapped her on the back.
"Sarah Charlotte, read the real question."
"But we're all dying to know, Janie," said Jason. "You open your notebook 20 times a day and stare down into that milk carton. Come on, admit it. What's it all about?"
Her mother brought in a platter of turkey sandwiches on rye and 2 liters of Coke.
"I wondered about that too, darling," she said. "That Saturday you practically had a heart attack because your notebook fell open. All I saw was flour dairy."
Sick fear enveloped Janie like fog. "Not here," she thought. "Not in front of Jason and Sarah Charlotte. Not when Mom is the happy hostess and good mother. In fact, not ever." "I voted not to have New Jersey."
"Since when is it anybody's business but ours?" said Reeve.
He rolled over against Janie and kept rolling until he had flattened her. From beneath him she made strangling, "let me have air" noises.
"Uncle,"
whispered Janie. Reeve rolled off onto the carpet again. He lay on his back and said to the rest, "Young lovers deserve privacy." Sarah Charlotte looked twice as interested. "She knows where my carton is," thought Janie. "She'll study that till she's figured everything out."
"Back in a minute," Janie cried.
She ran upstairs into her room, ripped the carton out of the notebook, and rushed into the bathroom. Locking the door behind her, she started to shred the carton to flush it down the toilet. But she couldn't tear herself in half. The milk carton was all that existed of herself. She walked back into her bedroom and slid it between the mattress and the bedsprings instead. There had been a week of peace, a solid week without nightmares or daymares. In the silver notebook, Janie wrote all theories and all possible variations. Then she began condensing and choosing the most likely for final drafts.
"What do you want a final draft for?" said Reeve irritably. "What's the plan now? You're going to mail some anonymous notebook to New Jersey?"
He was very tense with her. He had taken her 20 miles to get to a very popular, expensive pizza video place and had bought dozens of tokens. They were sitting together playing a war game, and he wanted to laugh and be silly and win. New Jersey was interfering.
"Of course not," said Janie. "It's just for me."
Reeve said, "It's Pandora's box, isn't it?
The myth. The minute you opened that milk carton, it was all there. Every evil thing. And you'll never be able to put it back. It's out now."
The only evil, she said, is that I don't mind that it happened. I like my life. You see, I can't tell you how tired I am of New Jersey. I just want to finish my thought, okay? He looked at the screen. He counted the tokens in his palm. He shrugged. Okay. She stabbed a game button. I'm gonna beat the pants off you, boy. He laughed.
Any time, girl.
His bombers attacked her tanks. She continued her thoughts in the silver notebook. If Reeve was tired of New Jersey, the notebook was all she had now. Why didn't Frank and Miranda see the newspaper coverage of the kidnapping? It was on the television news for days, too. I suppose they were pretty distracted that week. Hannah returned, complete with granddaughter, and they fled. Who had time for a morning paper? If they had bought a paper the day after Hannah came, Frank would have seen the photograph, would have called the police himself, taken the Springs little girl home. Hannah would have been imprisoned. The Johnsons' lives, no, back then they were still Javinsons, would have been completely different. Grimmer. Emptier. I would have no memory of the Johnsons, instead of no memory of the Springs. That night she went to an awards banquet, at which her father as coach received a trophy. It was a typical banquet meal. Gravy, red meat, and wilted salad. Her father even made a little speech, thanking not just his team and the team parents, but his beloved wife and daughter. He wanted Janie to take the trophy for him. Janie smiled back at her father, tall and perfect. The after-school athlete was an odd match for the dedicated, formal, elegant committee woman he had married. They smiled at her, and she knew they had forgotten Hannah right then. She was their daughter. She was their love. She stood up in the banquet hall, and hundreds of little soccer players and their parents applauded for Janie, who had done nothing whatsoever. She stood up, and a mother nearby whispered, "Look at that wonderful red hair. Isn't she a beautiful child? The Johnsons are so lucky." They were photographed as a trio. It would be in the sports pages. Her mother whispered, "I'm glad you wore the purple sweater. Nobody believes a redhead looks great in purple until they see you, Janie." The photographer shouted, "Smile now. Smile, everybody." Janie smiled. She thought, "If I don't tell New Jersey that I'm safe, I am still the spoiled brat, still the rotten daughter who didn't care about the family she had left behind. The only way to be the good daughter is to tell." They left the banquet to the handshakes of parent after parent, thanking Mr. Johnson for all the hours, all the sportsmanship, all the encouragement, all the positive thinking he had given their sons and daughters. That night, Janie lay on her bed holding the telephone in her arms like a teddy bear, dialing the 800 number. This time, she let it ring. It rang once, twice, three times. "They're not home," thought Janie. "How can a toll-free 800 number not be home?" Four times. Adair's parents have each remarried since the divorce. So Adair has four parents. Two mothers, two fathers. It's not so unusual. I can do it, too. Five. There was a click. Her heart slammed upward in her chest. The carefully rehearsed sentences vanished from her head. Her mouth was so dry her tongue scraped. "Oh, my God, what have I done?" Her head screamed. "I have betrayed my mother and father. I..." "You have reached," began a recording. The voice asked her to leave her name, number, and a brief message after the tone, and they would get back to her. After the tone, Janie hung up. The phone rang in her arms. Its shrillness invaded her heart, making her leap from the bed, scattering books to the floor. "They tapped my phone. They're calling back. They've got me."
"Hi, Sarah Charlotte,"
said Sarah Charlotte, who always spoke as if she were phoning herself.
"Hey, girl, what's up?" said Janie.
She was slippery with sweat. She even smelled of fear and tasted it in her mouth. It was like biting metal.
"You know Reeve's best friend, Michael?"
"Not very well."
"Better than I do. I adore Michael. Do you think you could ask Reeve to ask Michael to ask me out?"
Janie could hardly get through the conversation. She had to plan every sentence, figure ahead the possible answers to possible questions. It was harder than homework. Sarah Charlotte babbled on and on about Michael and boys and friendships between boys. Usually Janie could pass an hour, even 2 hours, on these precise topics.
"Don't you and Reeve ever do things with Michael? He and Michael used to be inseparable. Isn't Michael always over at Reeve's house?"
Janie struggled to listen. Her mind exploded with loyalties and parents. She couldn't seem to put Sarah Charlotte into the framework of her life. She couldn't figure out the conversation they were having.
"What kind of friendship is it when the only words you say now are yes, no, maybe, and mm-hmm?" said Sarah Charlotte. "I'm sick of this, Janie. You aren't any fun anymore. You don't even like any of us anymore."
She tried to find an explanation that didn't include New Jersey.
"That isn't true," she whispered.
But Sarah Charlotte had already hung up. Reeve drove straight for the scenic overlook. She knew by his driving. It was more physical, more excited.
"I want to be a nice person," she thought. "I want to be the kind of little girl who would have screamed for help when she got kidnapped. I don't want to be somebody who thought it was neat. But I don't want to be Jenny Spring."
"Reeve, pull over."
"I can't stop here, Janie." "Pull over."
He yanked the car to the edge of a road that barely had passing room anyway. Behind them, a car honked. Janie opened her door, leaned out, and threw up into some unfortunate person's shrubbery. "If I can't write it out of my mind," she thought, "I guess my body is going to throw it out instead." She refused to go home. Reeve drove to a diner miles away because she refused to go any place where people might recognize them. In the bathroom, she mopped herself up with paper towels. Her complexion was like kindergarten paste, white and gluey. Then she dragged Reeve back to the car. She couldn't sit in the diner. People might look at her.
Reeve said, "Janie, I thought you could just forget about it, but obviously that isn't working. So you have to tell them. You have to talk about it with them."
"No.
Janie, you're losing it. Literally."
"Fine."
"No, it isn't fine. You've got to have your parents in this with you."
"No, because the minute I do that, I have to trade them in again for another set."
"No, you don't. Nobody would make you."
"That other family, those people in New Jersey, you think I could just call them up and say, 'I'm fine, so stop worrying and don't bother me either'? They'll be in court. They'll call the FBI. They'll get lawyers. And I..."
Janie's voice turned so ragged it no longer sounded human. "I'll have to admit what happened at that shopping center."
"Janie," shouted Reeve. "What happened was, a pretty blonde woman took a pretty little girl for a ride in her car and they had a great time."
"And the little girl never looked back," said Janie. "I hate her. I hate that little girl."
She began to cry. The tears made no noise and took no effort, but they burned fiercely, as if they were the acid remains of her horrible deeds. She wouldn't let Reeve touch her. She wouldn't answer anything he said to her.
They went home, finally. Janie crouched against her door
and Reeve driving with a stiff precision. A mile from home, he said,
"I'm sick of this. Now tell them."
"No."
"Tell them," said Reeve, his voice hard and loud, "or I'm not seeing you again."
"I'm not ready to tell anybody."
"You're being stupid. Either wise up or I don't want to be bothered."
"Fine," she said. "Don't be bothered." She jumped out of the Jeep, slamming the door. Her foot caught on a loose pavement brick and she stumbled, blinded by tears. "This is my life we're talking about," she shouted at him, "and you don't want to be bothered anymore." Reeve got out of the Jeep more slowly.
"Janie," he said.
"Drop dead."
She ran in the side door and slammed that, too.
Inside the house, the tears ripped through her with even more force. How could she have done that? Why be mad at Reeve, the only one on her team, the only one who knew? Her sobs made a racket, ripped out of her lungs even as she tried to choke them down. It brought her mother and father running. "What's the matter?" they cried, enfolding her. "I broke up with Reeve," she said, praying it wasn't true.
Chapter 17. The following week was bright with pain. Life flickered in Janie's face like flashbulbs going off. No matter where she looked, Reeve was there, but he neither looked back nor waved. In the mornings when she got up, he was already gone. She couldn't bear to take the school bus again. That public declaration. "Yes, I lost him." Her mother drove her to school every morning. Afternoons, Adair dropped her at home unless she took the bus that passed the town library. You know life is pretty grim if reading about Stalin and Khrushchev beats all the other options, thought Janie. She tried to make herself laugh, but nothing in life was amusing. 5 days after her scene in the driveway, Reeve drove home with a senior named Jessica. Janie knew Jessica by sight, a tall, thin, dark girl with very short hair and a brittle smile. She had thought nothing could be more painful than New Jersey. She was wrong. Reeve's arm around Jessica kept her awake as many hours as New Jersey ever had.
"If that isn't a classic," said Sarah Charlotte.
She was enjoying her role as comforter. It had made them best friends again, although she was no longer the best friend Janie wanted.
"I want Reeve," she thought. "Everybody knows," said Sarah Charlotte, "that Jessica sleeps around." "Was that his reason?"
She looked intently at Janie.
"Did you go all the way with Reeve or not?"
Janie shook her head. They had come close. All that they had done, she had loved, would always cherish, would never describe to Sarah Charlotte.
"Clearly," said Sarah Charlotte, whose knowledge of sexuality came entirely from talk shows, "that's the only thing that mattered to Reeve in the end."
What mattered to Reeve, thought Janie, is what matters to everyone. Being first in somebody's life. I put New Jersey first. He took it for a long time, considering. During study hall, Janie opened her silver spiral notebook. Losing Reeve had made one thing clear. If she also lost her parents, she would die. Never, never could she get through that. She had condensed the facts and theories of the kidnapping to 4 pages. She tore them out of her glitter notebook, folded them, and stuffed it all into an envelope under the clip. She missed having the carton there to look at. She licked the stickum and closed the flap. "There," she thought, "I'm done thinking about it." She would pin the envelope and the milk carton to the inside of the polka dot dress and put all 3 back in the trunk in the attic. That would store the problem
for another season. Later on in the class, feeling spooky, she put the Springs address on the envelope. Mr. and Mrs. Jonathan Avery Spring, 114 Highview Avenue. It made her heart pound to write it.
Did I know that address by heart once? She wondered.
She slid the envelope under the clip in her notebook. This afternoon her mother would be tutoring. Plenty of time for a solitary trip to the attic. She would study Hannah's photographs, and then lock the trunk. She had to sit at lunch with Jason, Sarah Charlotte, Adair, Katrina, and Peter, instead of with Reeve. She felt like the most conspicuous person in the cafeteria. She didn't know where to focus her eyes. She wanted to look at Reeve, only Reeve, always Reeve. But Reeve was sitting with Jessica, laughing.
We didn't laugh enough, thought Janie. I haven't had any laughter to spare since the milk carton.
She wondered if she could learn how to laugh again, if there would be a time, living next door to Reeve, when she would smile in an ordinary way at the driver of that Jeep. Sarah Charlotte wanted to have a pity party for Janie.
I'll invite only girls, she promised. Let's see. Adair, Katrina, Jody, Linda, Hillary. Who else do you want? Should it be a sleepover? We'll sit around and talk about how rotten boys are, and Reeve in particular.
Jody. Memory slugged her. Jody. One of my sisters is named Jody. I don't want a pity party, she said, starting to cry. Jason and Pete suddenly had to get extra desserts. They fled the table.
Well, they won't be back, said Adair. Boys collapse when girls cry.
That sounds like Shakespeare, said Sarah Charlotte.
Embroidery on pillows, agreed Adair. The bell rang. Janie walked between Adair and Sarah Charlotte as they battered their way out of the cafeteria and back to English.
Don't let me be in the doorway the same time as Reeve and Jessica, she thought. Please.
One prayer answered, but only one. English ended. History poked along. Passing period following passing period. Janie went to her last class slowly, not because she was dawdling, but because she felt weak.
I haven't eaten in days, she thought.
Pretty soon my mother won't just have me at adolescent trauma counseling. She'll have me at the anorexia clinic. The halls swayed and grew in the middle and clapped their sides against Janie's head. She touched the lockers to steady herself, but was knocked from the wall by a bunch of worthless boys. Druggies and scuzzies all.
I'm a scuzz, too, thought Janie. Tossing out my family like last week's newspaper.
The halls were empty. She didn't know how that had happened. A moment ago she had been one among 100 kids. She fumbled with her blue English notebook. She needed to see the carton. Dimly she remembered the carton was no longer there. It was between the mattress and the box springs. But her silver notebook was there. No, it wasn't. It was in her book bag. But the envelope was still there. No, it wasn't. There was nothing under the clip. The clip was broken. She had used the clip so often that the cheap little spring had snapped. The envelope was gone.
I addressed it, she thought. To New Jersey.
It was one of the SADD mistakes with my real return address on it. But no stamp. It can't go anywhere without a stamp. Unless some good Samaritan stamped it for me. Unless the post office delivers it and charges the postage to the Springs. If it's been mailed, it will be read. They'll know. In 2 days, the Springs will know who I am and where I am. How am I going to save my mother and father now? Her thoughts stabbed her separately, knife after knife of fear. Past the offices, past the school library, past language labs, Janie walked. Reeve had last period chemistry. She found the room and opened the door, walking in. Juniors and seniors looked up, startled. She couldn't see their faces. Reeve was somewhere among them, but her eyes wouldn't focus. The teacher was writing on the blackboard as he lectured, his back partially to the class. "Reeve?" Janie said, plowing across the room like a tractor. The teacher turned, chalk in hand.
Miss?" he said.
"Reeve, I need Lizzie's phone number," said Janie, walking steadily toward Reeve, although there were desks and knees in her path. Reeve unfolded from his desk, took her shoulder, turned her around.
"Be right back," he said to his teacher.
"And just where do you think you're going?" said the teacher. But they were out of the room, and the teacher didn't bother to follow them.
"You're pushing me," said Janie.
"I'm walking at a regular speed," said Reeve.
"You're trying to walk while standing still. Pick up your feet. Are you on drugs or something?"
"I don't think so. I need Lizzie's phone number. Reeve, you won't believe what I've done, how stupid I've been."
"I think I could believe that," he said.
She talked. He drove her home.
"I hate to play psychiatrist with you, but you didn't lose that letter by any accident, Janie.
Any more than you wrote it and put it in an envelope and addressed and sealed it by accident. You had to get out of this somehow, and that's the route you took." The house was empty. They went into the kitchen where Janie stared at the wall phone and Reeve automatically checked her refrigerator for something to eat. It embarrassed him, and he shut the door without taking anything. He wrote down Lizzie's number for her.
"Do you want me to call her first?" he said.
She shook her head. She was starting to cry. Now she could see him clearly. Reeve, whom she adored. No wonder he had walked her out of chemistry. She must have looked completely demented, storming desks to get at him. She could imagine the class snickering, telling Jessica, preparing to humiliate Reeve when he got back. His fingers, full of car keys, rested stiffly on the counter. She would have to give him permission to go. Reeve would force himself to be neighborly to the end. She bit the insides of her cheeks. She didn't want to blackmail him by crying.
"Thank you for the ride home," she whispered. "You don't have to stay."
The empty house seemed very noisy. The freezer hummed, the furnace buzzed, the clock ticked. Her own pulse throbbed in her forehead. She managed to look at Reeve.
"Janie," he said. "I'm sorry."
She nodded behind the blind windshield of her tears.
"Me too. It's okay."
She turned away from him.
"Think about Lizzie," she ordered herself. "One disaster at a time. Think how you're going to beg Lizzie to call New Jersey before they get the letter and call the police."
"No," said Reeve, swallowing audibly. "I mean, I'm sorry, and I want to make up. That kind of sorry."
Chapter 18.
"In their place," said Janie's father, "I'd move heaven and earth to ruin the people responsible."
Lizzie sat quietly, having laid out the circumstances so easily, so clearly, that Janie marveled. It had taken Janie weeks of daymares to work her way to the end of this. Lizzie reached the end in 10 minutes. Lizzie's green wool dress had a narrow waist and very full skirt.
sitting primly on the edge of the coffee table, her skirt draped to the carpet. She looked like a tent in which tiny children would want to play house.